to the Android Police Podcast. I'm Jules Wong. It's a clip show week this week, as Will is on vacation and Daniel is swamped. So the editor's got to come up with some fancy idea here. We got to earn his pay. And what I've come up with is a look at Apple and the moat it's made around iMessage. From RCS to Bieber, it's been a busy few months, but the place to start has to be 2015, the year that Google acquired would-be RCS server vendor Jibe. Since then, the company has actively floated RCS support for Android devices, in many cases to the chagrin of carriers worldwide. Last year, Google took the decision to have its Messages app run conversations through RCS by default. And why not? You get read receipts, larger message size limits, the option to encrypt in transit, and a whole bunch more benefits. Well, all the while, Apple has refused to have iOS support RCS, sticking with the older and less secure SMS and MMS standards. Man, it's a alphabet soup of standards. When chatting with anything other than an iPhone, it was iMessage or bust. The company sheepishly admits this restriction helped keep their customers as iPhone owners from time to time, but it wasn't so sheepish at one point, and that point occurred in September of 2022. We begin there with episode 22 of the podcast, as Daniel and Will are joined by our former co-host, Ara Wagner.
So what I want to end the show with, though, Will, is an opinion that you have on the site that is causing the internet to blow up and get really mad at you for things you're not saying.
No one's mad at me. No one's mad at me.
So let's read the title of this, because that's it's an amazing...
Don't read the title. That's what people are really mad at.
Well, exactly. I want you to explain it. The sooner Android accepts RCS is dead, the sooner we can choose the next messaging platform that matters. What do you mean by that?
I don't think my position is as extreme as the headline makes it sound. I really don't. I think the headline is accurate, but the thousand words that follow, I think, is a much more level-headed argument. So this starts last week, real quick. A day after Apple's keynote, Tim Cook is at Vox's Code Conference on stage. There's a Q&A segment. Someone asks about RCS support, and Tim Cook says, our users don't want it. And guy in the audience says, well, my mom doesn't have an iPhone. You know, I want to send her high-res photos. And Tim Cook says, I would suggest you buy your mom an iPhone. That is how this starts. So this is really the first concrete statement we've had from Apple on RCS, I would say. As far as I can find, Google has been poking this bear all year, like literally since January and leading up to a campaign they launched last month that I believe we talked about on this show. It has not gone anywhere, right? Like Apple launched iOS 16, no RCS support. Apple launched their iPhones today, no RCS support. They said, we're not interested. Thanks, but no thanks. Buy an iPhone if you want to have a good messaging experience. Now, this is a US problem. I say that in the piece. This is a US centric thing. In the rest of the world, everyone is happy on WhatsApp or Signal or whatever. And basically, my argument is that we should go back to trying to persuade the iPhone-owning people in our lives who are upset that, you know, the group chats are bad or that you're sending low-res photos. In 2022, third-party chat apps are pretty good, right? If you want to use a Meta app, if you don't mind, WhatsApp is right there. Messenger is right there. Your mom's on Facebook. Go for it. If you don't want to use a Meta app, totally get it. I've been using Signal for the last couple months. I've actually grown to really like it. I think Signal's pretty good. Uses your phone number. If that's a big deal to you, I personally like using my phone number, so that's great. Just, it might be time to one more time persuade the people on iPhone in your life to jump onto a third-party app. That's kind of my big point. We've tried it with Hangouts. You might have tried it with Allo. It didn't work either time, and now it's time to just not worry about what Google's doing, not worry about what Apple's doing, just use a different app.
I mean, I love this in theory, but I think you're wrong.
Yes.
In practice, because the threshold to opening another app is going to be much higher than opening up the default app that Apple forces you to use.
But you're already on Instagram.
Sure.
But Instagram has...
I mean...
Probably, statistically.
The only time I open Instagram for one DM with one person and to check on Pocket Princesses for a new comic. That's literally all I use it for. Like, I have a Telegram. I haven't even activated it on the last two phones that I've used because I use it so little. And every time I open it, I'm just getting inundated with crypto spam.
Well,
I understand sure. that it's like, okay, if the, like, multi-carrier, multi-system, like, if everything else is going to support this but Apple won't, then our solution can't be to just then give that monopoly to another company. Especially because we're not going to be able to have any one app as a centralized, like, this is where we can all message together. The thing about MMS and RCS was that it was one system and everybody could use it.
Yeah, but this is all ignoring the fact that the rest of the world doesn't have this issue. Like, this is not...
The rest of the world doesn't have this issue because they picked one platform 10 years ago and they've stuck with it. And that's WhatsApp.
Right. But you just said we can't do that.
We can't! Because WhatsApp got bought, and now we don't know what that data is being used for.
No,
but
no,
all
no.
Those Ari,
you're contradicting yourself. I think you're also wrong in this scenario.
I probably am.
Only Daniel's right today,
the only
guys.
One who's right here, and only I'll explain, Daniel. I'll explain to you why I'm right. I'm right because this is not a matter of practical application. This is not about me choosing to put Telegram or WhatsApp in my iPhone dock instead of the Messages app. It is the fact that there is some psychological barrier for most people when they think about the difference between an SMS and an app-based messenger. And that is true of every single permutation of this argument. And Apple has somehow magically made it feel like iMessage is both an SMS app and a messenger. Because it is. And it's the only one that's been able to do that. And I acknowledge what you're saying, Will, about the fact that this doesn't appear to be a problem outside of the US. But what you have to acknowledge is that over the last 10 years or 9 years or whatever since iMessage launched, this learned behavior has been ingrained in iPhone users. And Apple's argument here is that this is not going to change and it's not our problem because we've made a better experience. And Google's argument is, well, then just freaking support the sublayer to make SMS better because, like, they've basically said, you've won. Like, Google has literally said, you've won here. Throw us a bone. And Apple's like, we don't want to throw you a bone because we want you to die. Like, that's the whole thing here.
I mean, literally, isn't the buy your mom an iPhone thing, isn't that, like, the basically the opening line for saying, okay, y'all wanted a case for anti-competitive behavior? Here it is. Let's
Correct.
Go smack a fine on them if sure. they will not add this.
Right.
They will not change unless the government makes them.
And
so
I say that in the piece.
Time.
No. I think what you're saying is correct, but Google basically is begging, and they're saying, we know iMessage won. We just want you to give us this little taste of like, equality. And Apple's like, why would we do that? Because over the last 10 years, you've trained your user base in a certain way with Android and with Google Assistant and with Google has done this. If you think about search, you think about Google. Apple can make the same argument about iMessage. Google is basically telling regulators, we have lots of search competitors. We have lots of mobile competition because you can fork Android all you want. You can do whatever you want with Android. You can make your own experience. Nobody's forcing you to use GMS. And at the same time, turning around and asking Apple, please, we just want your scraps. We just want RCS to be integrated into iMessage. And Apple's basically saying, like, you're not giving us any space here in the other places that you're dominant. Why would we give any space in the area that we're dominant?
Yeah, I agree.
Whether it's right or not is irrelevant, but it's their prerogative. And I think the argument here that user behavior is going to change because Telegram or Signal are good apps avoids the reality that the Messages app on an iPhone is not an app. It's just not.
Sure. I fully agree. I am coming at this not from the angle of is Google right or wrong, because I think they're right. I think their argument is self-serving, but they're right. It doesn't change that. I'm coming at this personally, and I wrote it very much in a much more personal way than I usually write on the site, which is just that, like, I'm tired. Like, I'm tired of this battle. Like, I'm tired of being like, oh man, messaging is going to be so good next year. Just, I've been saying that for, I got my first Android phone in 2011. So, and iMessage launched, I want to say in 2011 also, probably. 2011, 2012, something like that.
It's iOS 5, I think so.
Yeah. Around that time. And so it's like, I'm just tired. And like, you know what? Most of my group chats have moved to Facebook Messenger or Signal in the last year, and it's gotten so much better. And like, I don't have to worry about lock-in. I don't have to worry about anything like that. So it is, if Apple adopts RCS next year, or they're forced to by the government, or the carriers are like, we want to start phasing out SMS, everyone has to switch to RCS, that totally down for that. I would love that. I still want that. I do think, you know, I'm 27. I think especially people under 30 are starting, whether or not they're on iPhone, are starting to realize like, oh, it isn't just an Android issue. It is actually an issue with like, these apps are not compatible, but there's these apps like, oh, like if I send it through Instagram, it's fine, right? And so I think specifically in that demographic, the conditions are right for some peer pressure to say like, just grab this app, we'll just start the group chat there, and we don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, and that part I absolutely think you're right about. And like, I'm being facetious. Like, neither of you are wrong. It's just that there's no right argument to this, because
but Daniel is right. But let's be clear.
He is right. Yeah, it's not that you were wrong. It's that I'm just more right. No, I just think it's like there's so much of a psychological element to this.
Yeah,
I agree. Also, can. Like, it's been litigated already that the way that Apple built iMessage and built that psychological idea that iMessage is both text messages and something better than text messages, that was all built off of things that were known, like Apple been fined for this, but they were found to be deceptive practices.
Yeah, but nothing's ever been forced on them. Like, there has been zero regulatory consequence to Apple beyond... The only thing that Apple has been forced to do is change third-party billing and allow links inside their apps, because that was litigated through the Epic trial. Congress or the Justice Department has not said to Apple, like, your messaging platform is contributing to lock-in. You're going to be forced to change.
And it is. And this is happening at the same time that we just saw, by some metrics, iPhones are above like 50% in the US, right? And so it's like now they are like literally the majority, like Android is not in the US, right? And so I do wonder if, you know, if literally while we were recording this, the video of Tim Cook saying buy your mom an iPhone is now online, like as we were recording this, I do wonder if, like, you know, they're kind of pushing their luck a little bit on this. Google is making a lot of noise. Apple is making a lot of, like, Tim Cook probably said it as a joke, but probably should not have said, to fix your problem, buy one of our products in a filmed Q&A. I do wonder if the government does eventually pay attention to this, whether anything happens in a world where, you know, antitrust, it like doesn't matter.
Well, aren't they investigating, like, we have commissions and whatnot, and the Consumer Protection Product Bureau.
Yeah, I'm just not going to put any faith in any of that.
I can't put faith in any of these, considering they have, like, okay, we have said in a court of law that this was wrong multiple times. Nothing has changed because we have not punished these people for it. Like, either punish them or stop admitting the wrongdoing without actually doing anything to change it. Because Apple has just gotten away with this for a decade. They have finally browbeat their way to majority market share in the United States. This is the time that you go, okay, these are unfair business practices, and they have now contributed to a monopoly. Because they control over half of the market. One company controls over half of the U.S. mobile market. Android is multiple manufacturers. It's not Google. You have gotten what you wanted through these unfair practices now. Now it's time to pay up. Or it's time to fix it and finally make this interoperable.
But it just comes down to, like, while that happens, you know, maybe in 2024, Apple has to adopt RCS. Maybe, you know, maybe it happens. But right now I'm tired and you can message me on Signal.
Like, well, that's you're tired, but you're also generating an enormous number of clicks for our site, which I'm very happy with.
RCS would continue to be an on and off matter of coverage for the show until last November, when Apple stated that it would begin supporting RCS in 2024. During episode 81, we were already talking about how Carl Pei's Nothing came out with an app to help bridge Android users to the iMessage protocol, so you'll hear mentions of that as Daniel and Will hash out Apple's announcement.
Apple decided to say that it will support RCS messages at some point in 2024.
Yeah.
So this happened yesterday. So they were, sorry, this happened two days.
48 hours nothing. In between these two yes. announcements.
Right. So I'm sitting in a session yesterday around 10 a.m.
Yeah.
I start seeing like a little, like a flitter of activity nearby me. Like everybody picks up their phone and starts yeah. like, you know, just doing more things than they were doing a second before. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then Rich Woods, the mm-hmm. editor-in-chief of XDA, who's in the same room as me, texts me. He goes, it's so funny when everybody gets the same DM at the same time. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I pick up my phone and I see just this like barrage of messages from my various Slack and Telegram groups.
Yeah.
Being like, holy shit, it's happening. Oh my God, what's going on? And then like I start reading and Apple had briefed a bunch of publications, 9to5 Mac, TechRadar, you know, all, it's funny because it wasn't like they briefed Android related publications. This was very much an Apple and an
yeah,
iPhone.
It wasn't even briefing. Like The Verge wasn't briefed, which really surprised me. It was like mm-hmm. kind of more Apple specific or, you know, TechRadar is not Apple specific necessarily, but certainly 9to5 Mac, you know, I would love to know how they chose who to brief behind the scenes. Cause yeah, some sites had this right at 1 PM Eastern as an embargo. And then there were the other sites like us, like even like The Verge that were like one, you know, 108 breaking, developing Apple is announcing yeah. RCS, more to come. Yeah.
So this is really interesting because, you know, sort of the flip of what Nothing is doing. It's not making iMessage available to Android users, but it's allowing Android users and iPhone users to communicate with a more modern protocol. Now, this is something Google has been asking for literally years Apple to support, and it is unclear why the company decided to start supporting it now. I think
I disagree.
There were indications that
I know exactly why the company is supporting it now, or why it made this announcement. I have a piece up on the site today called Why Apple Finally Decided to Adopt RCS on iPhone. And it is because of the EU, but it is specifically because yesterday was the deadline for challenges to be submitted in the argument against making iMessage a core service in the European Commission's DMA rules. So basically they timed this on the last day to be like, you don't need to regulate us, we're adding RCS. That's what we're doing. You don't need to make us interoperable with WhatsApp or any other service. We're doing RCS. Yeah. You guys happy?
Yeah.
And it was funny to watch Nothing and kind of specifically Carl Pei try to play this up as a response to Nothing chats on Twitter, which like absolutely no disrespect to anyone at Nothing. I just frankly, my guess would have been a response from Apple on Nothing chats would have been some kind of legal fight, perhaps, or anything to kind of try to be like, you're not using our service correctly, whatever, if they were going to respond at all. Nothing did not play into this. Like, this was timed to the EU. This is all about, you know, Google sent. We talked about it. I think it was in the part of the show last week that got released, but we talked about Google sending a letter along with a bunch of carriers about how iMessage should be a core service. And this is 100% about Apple arguing its case for the EU, basically.
Right. So just to be clear what we're talking about here. So the DMA is a Digital Markets Act is a piece of legislation that is working its way through the EU Court of Justice and the EU Regulatory Board. It supposes that there are six or seven,
so far,
Apple being one of them.
Yep.
Alphabet, Meta, ByteDance, Amazon, and a couple of others. And they are basically the gatekeepers for the internet, for lack of a better term. And this interoperability that has been sort of floated as an idea would force iMessage to work more or less on the same protocol, or at least have some sort of way of communicating directly with other services deemed to be gatekeepers or deemed to be essential services like WhatsApp. So what's interesting about this is you're absolutely right. Not only did Apple file a petition contesting the regulations that the EU are putting forth, but they are saying we are proactively taking measures to make Android users more comfortable, I guess, communicating with Apple users by integrating RCS. However, In the hours after the announcement, Apple confirmed that nothing is really going to change from a perception perspective because RCS messages will still be green. And to your point and the point that you brought up in your excellent piece around how Apple is still the kingmaker for US and for teenagers around the world, but in particular for US teenagers, nobody knows what RCS is. And this is mainly an issue for Android users to get a better experience talking to individuals and groups on the iPhone. So this is a brilliant move by Apple because Apple still retains the power here. The power dynamic is still in Apple's favor.
I agree.
And it placates Google because Google gets to say, we finally have a, quote, messaging service that is interoperable and built into the OS the way that iMessage is. So there are a few caveats. I'd like you to go over them. One of which is that right now, the current universal profile spec for RCS does not support end-to-end encryption. Yeah. And that's a big one. So walk us through that.
If you are using RCS on Android right now, it is encrypted. That is a Google addition, an overlay basically to the RCS universal standard. Like, that is not part of the protocol as it exists today. Apple has come out and said they will not be using Google's end-to-end encryption standard. So essentially, although Apple says that it will be working with the GSMA to make RCS a more private protocol, that's probably part of the reason that this isn't launching like next month in an iOS 17 point whatever. 17? Are we in 17? I actually don't even know
anymore. You're in 17, yeah.
Like, we're probably looking at this as an iOS 18 or 18.1 update next year, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it, and we'll see how that works. That's also kind of their excuse for keeping green bubbles, is that they're saying that when your bubbles are blue, that's when you know that you are using the most private, secure platform around, which is, of course, iMessage. And if your bubbles are green, you should be careful because you never know what those Android users are doing. It's brilliant from Apple. Like, if I'm taking Apple's perspective here, keeping the green bubbles around while building an RCS is like the most obvious decision in the world because green bubbles already have such a stigma around them, just like as a poor experience on iOS specifically. Because RCS is a standard, like not even Google's interpretation of it on Android, but like just RCS does support all the things that you would want to have a better time messaging between iOS and Android, which is typing indicators and read receipts and better group chats and high quality media, as well as location sharing. All of that is going to be there, but it's not going to be obvious, right? Like, when this launches, even if you can now start a group chat with Android users and have all of the modern and rich messaging features you want, it will not be obvious that anything has changed until you really start paying attention to it, which means that stigma is going to last a lot longer than it would if the bubbles were purple and you were like, that's new. What does that mean for me? It's brilliant from Apple's side. I think it's a terrible user experience because iOS users will have a better time texting people using Android with this, but they might not know about it because they're going to just see green bubbles and be like, oh, I know how this works. This sucks. And they'll bounce basically, or they'll be like, you got to get an iPhone. But from Apple's perspective, I got to hand it to them. It's the right way to get a win out of being forced to try to avoid stricter regulation around this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, like, whether we're overthinking this.
We might be,
To the end user, if a green bubble comes with read receipts and you end up sending an MMS that happens to be not an MMS, but an IP-based photo that's full resolution, like, it'll just be a natural progression. And the fact is that millions of people running Android will still only be able to send SMS messages to iPhones anyway, because not every single handset supports RCS. And I think there will need to be some reconfiguration on the Google side, right? Because as you said, Apple's not going to support this until it supports end-to-end encryption. So they are working with the GSMA to integrate that into the spec, which would force Google to have to redo its overlay, because the universal profile is the baseline for this. And then Google has been adding to it. First, it supported single pair end-to-end encryption and then group end-to-end encryption. And if your chat is encrypted, you get a particular type of kind of send and read receipt. Like, it looks different. It's also weird that the Samsung Messages experience is different than the Google Messages experience, even though Samsung Messages uses Google's overlay itself. And in some regions, Samsung actually uses a reskinned version of Google Messages, except for the US, which is bizarre. So in Canada, if I buy a Samsung phone, I'm using Google Messages as my default messaging client, but it looks like Samsung Messages. Whereas I think in the US, if I'm not mistaken, it's actually a separate app.
Yes, it is.
So that whole thing needs to get fixed. Right? And like, yes, most phones, most Android phones that you buy today, except for Samsung in the US, which is admittedly a big part of that market, uses Google Messages. So Google won from that perspective, right? It fought Verizon, it fought AT&T, it fought T-Mobile, it fought all of the competitors out there. It made a deal with Samsung. It won. Google Messages is the client. However, Google Messages, when it sends an RCS message, guess what color it is? It's blue.
It's blue.
Right? It's blue.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of the publications that published this news yesterday, I think, mistook Apple's quote, or somebody said something different to them about a time frame. Because a bunch of places, including TechRadar, they said that early next year, Apple will roll out RCS support. From a conversation that they reportedly had with Apple, which was on background, so it wasn't attributable. Then Apple did release an on-the-record statement saying, later next year, Apple will support RCS. But I am 100% on board with you. I think they will not release it until the GSMA has updated the spec and Apple has released iOS 18, which is at the earliest September of next year.
As much as it worked for the time, I think Google probably should have tried to work with the GSMA earlier than this to get encryption as the standard rather than just being like, well, we did the rest of this ourselves, we'll do this too, because this does kind of put them on their back foot a little bit, and I think that's a mistake. The good news is that, I mean, we've seen evidence that Google has no issue really pushing ahead on advertising RCS as a standard, because we've watched their Get the Message campaign for a year now. And it's not just limited to the internet. I've seen their Get the Message ads in New York City. Like, this is a real thing that they've like spent money on trying to spread the message, right? And it didn't work. And I don't think Apple's decision has anything to do with their PR campaign. But nevertheless, they now have a year to basically claim a victory that they didn't earn and try to get the word out on Apple's behalf that in iOS 18 or whenever it launches, green bubbles are going to be very different than they were a year ago. And I think they'll do that. And they should do that. I think it would be dumb to not essentially fill in, because Apple is not going to talk about this at all in their ads. Like, they do not care if you know that the iPhone supports RCS in a year or whatever. In fact, they'd probably rather you not know. And I think Google is going to step up to the plate there and be like, no, no, no. Like, to be clear, our phones and your phones, now they work a lot better than they used to. And those green bubbles, just get used to that color because we're coming. I have no idea what that'll do to public perception of green bubbles and of cross-platform messaging. But like, I can see this coming and they're stupid if they don't do it.
I mean, I'm going to even predict something completely out there. Google and Apple are going to team up for a marketing campaign around RCS.
You think Apple wants to talk about it?
I think Google wants Apple to talk about this a lot. And okay. I think what's come out of the Google monopoly trial around how much they pay Apple every year for access to the iPhone, I think that there is a tacit understanding between the two companies that they need each other. And I think as Apple gets more scrutiny in the EU. I mean, we've already seen physical evidence of this with the USB-C port in the iPhone 15. So that would not have happened had the EU not pushed ahead with its legislation. And we're now 2 months into this change, and the world has not ended. People have had to buy new USB-C cords or whatever. Families have not broken up because one person's still using an older phone, I think.
I mean, can I tell you, when Maddie and I went to Maui for the Snapdragon Summit, she referred to USB-C as the normal USB port. And I was like, oh my God, I did it.
I'm so proud of you.
I've like brainwashed you into thinking USB-A is the weird one. USB-C is the normal port now. Like,
it is the
it's
normal
got that
port.
Old one. Oh, I agree. But like, we're way too into our niche to like know what normal people think anymore. I was like, oh man, we're here. We made it. USB-C is just this is the thing.
Tell
now.
That to every single plane that I'm on.
We were on a plane when she said it. Like that is what we were talking
they've
about.
They've not gotten the, they don't have the budget to upgrade those USB-A ports
they
yet.
They do not.
I just think it'll be cool. Like Google must have had an end game here, right? They must have known that what happens if we win, what happens if Apple relents at some point, right? Then what do we do? Google, sure. I mean, it's, you know, it can come out and say like, we support Apple's decision. We're very happy with this, blah, blah, blah. Although I'm very surprised that like, if you go to Google's blog right now, the like a response to Apple's decision is not plastered at the top saying, we did it. You know, look at our advocacy efforts, blah, blah, blah. Like patting themselves on the back here. I'm very surprised Google hasn't released a statement on this personally. But
their Get the Message site is not updated. It still says it's time for Apple to fix texting. And I agree. I'm surprised there isn't even just a banner that says like, get the latest on Apple's announcement this week or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a snarky tweet. You know, that's even all that's needed. But we know now how close, like we talked about this on the podcast, how Sundar Pichai actually had a conversation with Tim Cook in 2018 saying you should put the Google search app on iPhones. Like he had the audacity to say that. And I'm not saying Tim Cook even spent 1 second considering this, but the fact that Google's CEO 6 years ago said this to Tim Cook and it was actually something he felt comfortable bringing up is an indication that the relationship between the two companies is not nearly as adversarial as it may seem in public. And I think this RCS thing is likely going to provide both companies an opportunity. Apple does not have to make this widely known, but they may want to work with Google to say texting just got more secure for everyone, right? We are a privacy first company. We were the ones that pushed end-to-end encryption into the GSMA universal profile spec for RCS. Google didn't do that. Yeah. Like Google's had 4 years to do that and didn't do it. Apple is going to be the one to claim that victory. And Google will just be able to ride its coattails saying, we don't care who got it in. We just know that every time somebody sends an RCS message to an iPhone user, it goes through with read receipts, with higher quality photos and videos, with location sharing, et cetera, et cetera. And iMessage gets to still be a superior standalone messaging platform with all the other stuff that Apple has built into it over the years. And when I say superior, I mean that in like quotation marks.
No, Memoji is good, Daniel. We all know this. It's kind of, I mean, how do you even send messages without Memoji?
I have a 5-year-old, so Memoji is life.
It's cute. Like I messed around with it when it came out, then I set it aside and I was like, all right, back to just texting normally.
Back to taps on the Apple Watch. That's what we really need to use to communicate. It's like tapping each other heartbeats to know that we love each other and are thinking about it, each other. Like
we should bring that
2015 up was a simpler time.
God, that anniversary is coming up. We should just dig into all the stuff that first gen Apple Watch had that Apple pretends it never launched.
An $18,000 or $20,000
exactly.
18 karat gold
exactly.
version is exactly what we need. We should find one on eBay for... How much would it be now? Would it actually have increased
in price? Do you think it would
price?
Go up or down? Yeah, I'm curious. Do you think it went up or down?
Is it pegged to the price of gold? Because if that's the case, it's definitely like twice the price as it was in 2015.
It's probably a stupid amount of money. It's probably like
doesn't even work.
It doesn't work and it costs my salary. Like I would have to drop my entire salary on it.
Yeah, not something we want to invest in right now. Anyway, so yeah, that's my, what's it called?
Theory?
Yes.
Sure.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I need my afternoon coffee.
I kind of agree with you. You've kind of lured me over into thinking they'll talk about the security aspect of it, that they'll be like, we were the ones that got this done. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I agree. I still think they'll never mention it in their advertising specifically.
No.
Or
they may veil it.
Exactly. Like messaging more secure than ever. Leave it at that.
Exactly.
But
like iMessages just got more secure. Exactly. And then you'll be like, how? And Apple will just never explain it.
They'll be like, don't worry about it. Just keep sending those blue bubbles. Keep convincing all of your younger friends to buy iPhones.
My favorite thing will be is if Apple like makes RCS messages just a slightly darker green, and that will just be the only indicator. Like you'll need like a magnifying glass to try to tell the two apart. But some designer will be like, no, this is hash 3784964, not 363. And like, oh, okay, yeah. The design community will totally understand.
I linked it at the bottom of my why did Apple choose now to adopt RCS piece, that it's a piece from 2018 that I've never stopped thinking about, which is that the green bubbles on iOS violate Apple's own accessibility guidelines because the contrast ratio is like way off where it's supposed to be. And they do that on purpose.
White on green. That's bad.
They do it on purpose to make it annoying. Like the blue one is also not accurate, but like it's obviously much easier on the eyes. They do it on purpose to make it hard to read.
I remember this piece.
Yeah. It has stuck with me for 5 years because it's kind of the same with the security stuff. For all of, you know, I'm sure Apple would love to call itself an accessibility focused company, but like, the ratio on these colors, the contrast ratio is bad. I mean, it doesn't pass their own guidelines. I don't know how else to put it other than that. So fix it.
So go to the article that's in the show notes and then go down to the bottom. Actually, we'll just put the article.
Just link it. It's from Kevin Voller. It's on Medium. It'll be there. It's a really quick read if you don't remember it. It still matters today. And God, just Apple, just make it so that people can change the colors of the bubbles or whatever. Who cares? Or add purple. Everyone seems to agree RCS bubbles should be purple. Every piece I read that speculated before they said it would be green, including mine, said purple. And I don't know why we all agreed that it should be purple, but it seems to be a hive mind thing. So just do it. Make it purple.
I like that. I mean, it's funny. You could go so many different places, but purple does feel right.
Feels right
here.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, if you go to this article and you go down to the mock-up of if messages did meet the color contrast guidelines, yeah, and it shows a darker version of green with white text, it just, like, my nervous system calms down. I just feel better. My headache goes away. I lose weight.
It's literally that it's the meme of society if Apple just did the green color correctly.
Apple would just save so many lives, yeah, if it changed to a 4.5:1 contrast ratio. Yeah. That's it. If the iPhone was a 4.5:1 aspect ratio, that would be even better. That would just be a really long, thin stick. Then things would just truly, truly make sense.
Circling back to Nothing Chats for just a sec, the Android iMessage bridge problem, there have been rebel developers working on the solution to that for years, but somehow in 2023, it was a 16-year-old named James Gill that was able to finagle a way to turn green bubbles into blue ones. Eric Majikovsky, formerly of Pebble, now running a chat app named Beeper, hired him last year, and what came out of it was Beeper Mini, the end-all be-all of those efforts. Unfortunately, it was a cat-and-mouse game out of the gate, as Apple and Beeper spent weeks trying to outdo each other. Here's our coverage from mid-December, episode 84.
Give us the background on this, because you have been in touch with Beeper, the company, about its iMessage relay system for a while. You've talked to Eric Majikovsky, the CEO of Beeper, former CEO of Pebble. This came out of nowhere, seemingly. Not to say that, like, I mean, you and I knew it was coming in the sense that, like, they told you about Beeper Mini under embargo. You got to do a briefing. But, like, I didn't realize the extent to which this was a fully reverse engineered secure iMessage solution for Android until I read your article in the CMS and I was like, oh, okay. Like this is a big deal. So walk us through exactly what was announced yesterday with Beeper Mini.
I mean, you said it how I would have said it, which is they relied on a very young security researcher. I think he's in high school or like was in
high
school.
He was 16 years old.
Yeah, he's very young, who goes by JJ Tech. I don't believe, I believe they've said they don't want to share his identity, but he lives in the US. I think they said Pennsylvania. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, I mean, if you've used Beeper before, Beeper, which is now called Beeper Cloud, is a tool that works how all of these iMessage on Android experiences have worked up to this week, which is there is a server farm of Mac minis that you log into, and when you send a message or you get a message, it is relayed through there. Beeper features like encryption, like their app is open sourced. They've allowed people to actually use it. I would say, you know, it's been around for a couple of years now. I would say that, like, obviously there are going to be security concerns about any app where you're logging into a computer remotely, but this is not a Sunbird. Like, Beeper was never a Sunbird situation. Like, people have looked at it and been like, it's as safe as this kind of situation is going to be. You can, again, it's open source. You can go look at the code for it. But I would say that...
That said, I just want to interject, though, yeah, because it was pretty hard to get into Beeper,
yeah,
for that reason, right? Like, it required a virtual machine on a Mac in a server farm. It was relatively expensive. So they were really limiting the scale of availability.
I only got into Beeper because I know Ben at 9to5, and Ben had Beeper. And if you're a Beeper user, you get invite codes. And so Ben was able to give me one a few months ago.
But that's the thing, right? They like blue skied it. They blue skied it for a very long time.
I would say blue sky is the correct comparison here, where you kind of needed to know. And like Beeper, you know, Eric at Beeper was very upfront about, like, it's never been we're hiding what we're doing. Like, they've been upfront and been like, yeah, it's a server farm of Mac minis. Like, when I talked to him about Beeper Mini, he was like, it's expensive. Like, it's only getting more expensive. It is not a permanent solution, like, price-wise, especially because Beeper doesn't cost anything right now. We'll talk about Beeper Mini and its pricing in a second. But all of that is to say, Beeper Mini is a totally new app. It syncs with Beeper, what is now called Beeper Cloud, but you don't have to do it. You can go to my hands-on with it. You can see the system architecture diagram that they've drawn up that explains it better than I think I could. But effectively, like, Beeper Mini takes about 30 seconds to sign up for. It, I don't want to say tricks, because that's the wrong, I don't think that's the right verbiage, but it essentially pings Apple as if your phone is an iPhone to enroll in iMessage. No Mac Mini required. It is just being like, hey, it sends in the background an SMS message, as I believe an iPhone does, to say, hey, I'm an iPhone signing up for iMessage. And Apple goes, cool, here you go. And then it sends encrypted messages via iMessage through the same, like, APN that Apple uses. Like, it hooks onto that. And they've built a Beeper push notification service, because you'd have to keep Beeper Mini active in the background at all times to get incoming notifications, because that system is built into iOS itself. Beeper's push notification service, like, stands as a way to tell your phone, like, hey, you've got a new message, and then that message is encrypted on your phone. So it's all handled locally, essentially. There's no, you know, you're sending messages effectively how an iPhone sends messages, which is new. Like, this has not been an app before. There's never been an app like this on the Play Store, I would say. You don't even, and this was, I don't want to say a last minute addition, but it kind of was, because they pushed back their announcement to add it. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn to say that. You don't even have to log in with your Apple ID to use this app. Like, it is just your phone number. It's an optional thing in the settings to log into your Apple ID. But, like, if you just want to enroll your phone number in iMessage, you don't even need to give Beeper your Apple ID, which is crazy.
I will say that having my iPhone and Beeper Mini open on an Android phone side by side and seeing both of them update in real time through the cloud was a holy shit moment for me.
Well, so that's the thing. If you, I mean, we can talk about my iPhone review if we want, but I have my iPhone and my Pixel 8 Pro next to each other. They both have SIMs in them. The SIM in the iPhone is enrolled in iMessage, obviously. The SIM in the Pixel 8 is enrolled in Beeper, is enrolled in iMessage through Beeper Mini. And if you log in with your Apple ID, you will see both phone numbers in there. You will see, it will, if you've used iOS and you've opened iMessage settings before, you'll see the, like, send and receive options, which will have your email addresses and your phone number, and you can select what you can and can't send messages from. And that setting exists in Beeper Mini. So, like you said, you'll see messages come in both devices at the same time, even though they're on different SIMs. You can send from both numbers. It's kind of crazy.
Not only that, it supports group messages. It supports tapbacks and
everything.
And a few All other iMessage features except for the proprietary ones that rely on like stickers and App Store integration.
So even like the handful that aren't here is live location sharing and FaceTime audio and video calls. Those are planned for the future. I think iMessage effects are fun. I know they're gimmicky, but I think they're fun. And so I asked Eric if they were coming. They have to build the animations themselves, but like I was told, yes, that's on the roadmap to add. When someone sends you a laser animation, your phone, your Pixel or your Galaxy S20, whatever, will show you the laser animation that they sent you, which I think is rad. The only thing on the list right now that seems to be off, that they're just never going to be able to do, are iMessage games, which I think is fine because I've tried iMessage games and they're terrible.
I honestly didn't even know they were a thing.
Yeah, it's mostly through this app add-on, this iMessage add-on called Game Pigeon, which is, I don't know, man. If you want to play Battleship with your friends through iMessage, that's on you. But it's like playing Flash games in iMessage. I can see the appeal, but like you can just download an app that works across the platforms or whatever and figure it out from there. Or get there's plenty of ways to play like Connect 4 is the line that I have in my article on mobile. Like you can figure it out.
Do you remember when everybody was playing Farmville on Facebook?
Yeah, I was in high school.
Yeah. I mean,
it was a big high school. I mean,
it's just such a wild time.
There's no games on Facebook anymore, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure there are, but it's buried somewhere.
Yeah, like all features on Facebook end up like buried. If they never get retired, they just disappear down 17 menus and you never see them again.
Yeah.
Can you still poke? I know that was buried for a long time, but you can still do it.
Can you still poke? Oh my God. I don't even want to answer that.
All right. I want to write a piece today about, like, after we're done recording this, about how big is the appetite for iMessage on Android, particularly after RCS has been announced and it's going to deliver a lot of the stuff that I think people want out of cross-platform messaging. But if you have friends who are using iMessage as their primary source of texting you, and therefore you're mostly getting their messages through SMS, I really think this is worth a look. They've been very upfront and open about like, please come investigate our security. We have full confidence in it, which is not what we saw from Sunbird and Nothing Chats a couple weeks ago. I'm not saying fully take their word for it, but the app's been out for a few days. We haven't heard anything. They have done basically everything they can to invite people to investigate it. They even built a proof of concept Python script that you can just run if you want to see how it works on your computer. It's a very cool app that I'm excited to see continue to be developed. I am so curious if Apple finds a way to take action. So Beeper has been pretty confident in their ability to avoid being shut down, essentially, because a couple things. First of all, when I asked Eric, that was my first question was like, why is Apple not going to shut this down the day after you launch it? His answer was that he thinks Beeper Mini is good for Apple because it boosts security through messaging. It's end-to-end encrypted. They care about security. Therefore, they should be happy Beeper Mini exists, which I think is a very funny answer. But this is the company, as I point out in my hands-on, that spent all of 2009 fighting with Palm over the Prez ability to sync with iTunes. I don't know if you remember that, Daniel. They would push. It was like every 2 weeks, one of the companies would push an update. Like, Palm would push an update to allow the Prez to sync with iTunes. 2 weeks later, Apple would push an update to iTunes that breaks the Prez ability to sync with iTunes. And that went on for months. That was, like, on my mind while I was testing this, is, like, Apple could probably figure out a way to break Beeper Mini and not break older computers running iMessage. He seems confident. I would say watch the Snazzy Labs video, too, which goes into more detail on this. Beeper also pointed to a portion of the DMCA that protects reverse engineering. Still, like, as I said, Beeper Mini has a fee associated with it. It's $2 a month, which is not super expensive. It's $24 a year to get, you know, a good messaging platform on your phone. I don't think that's super expensive, but I am curious now that Beeper is, like, fully making money from this, if Apple wants to even just take them to court, basically, and make it a... Even if Beeper wins, dragging out a law battle could kill the company just money-wise. Like, Apple has infinite resources and Beeper does not. So I don't know what the future holds for Beeper Mini, but I'm happy it exists today. I just am curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of two minds about this. I've spoken to a couple people who, like developers, who have looked into this and have looked at the proof of concept. And the TLDR is that Apple killing the backend infrastructure that powers Beeper Mini will also kill a lot of legacy iMessage
exactly
integrations with like That's, people using yeah. older versions of iMessage, or just people who like use iMessage on older versions of Macs and stuff. Yes. It's like, Macs, I don't think one. That it's going to be easy for Apple to do this without interfering with the existing user base. That said, there's a reason they're not offering an annual subscription fee because it could just go down at any time. It's also relatively inexpensive, but yeah,
$2
Apple
a month is
not a, like they're a famously litigious company. If anything else, like they'd probably just want to cut, which that won't happen obviously. But if you recall the discovery emails around the DOJ case against Google and the emails that came out from Apple keeping iMessage off of Android from back in 2013, not just because it was a privacy concern, but because they knew that if cheaper phones ran iMessage, the moat would be smaller and people would be more likely to like buy their kids cheap Android phones because iMessage is the thing that holds families together. But I do think like just low key, to me, this makes me happy because like a 14-year-old whose parents thrust an Android phone in their hands and said, you don't have a choice, I'm just giving you this, will now at least be able to be in the group DMs. You know, it's like easier to ask their parents to pay for a $2 subscription fee than buy them a freaking iPhone. And as long as that's the case, and this will just be a seamless integration, you just have Beeper. And the next version of this is supposed to integrate SMS. So
they're adding everything. So eventually Beeper Mini will replace Beeper Cloud, I believe, is the long-term plan. And that includes every other plugin they have with Telegram, with Signal, with RCS, SMS, you name it, right? Like that's kind of Beeper's other strength in the cloud app, is that it can integrate all of your chat apps. And that's where they're going with Beeper Mini as well.
So it's like Trillium, but yeah. for mobile.
Yeah.
I love that.
Eric is very into, I had two different briefings with Eric and we texted back and forth once I was on Beeper as well. Like we were talking about like AIM clients, like he's very into bringing back like third party chat clients that, you know, have effectively died over the last decade.
I love that Trillium still exists. Trillium was released in 2000.
I did not know Trillium still
That existed. Is bananas. If you go to trillium.im right now, you can still download it. It's available. It's free for individuals, and they have an enterprise service where it's $8 a month. I love this. I love that like Trillium is still an app that exists that you can download today, made by Cerulean Studio. Oh my God, this is wild to me. Is Cerulean still independent? That is crazy. This makes me so happy that they're still independent. 23 years old, this app is. I love this. I'm so happy right now. So yeah, I mean, I hope this, just like for the high school kids that have an Android phone, I really think this is going to be life-changing for them. Anybody who's like shitting on this as a solution to the iMessage on Android problem, or if they think that like Apple should just like suck it up and release an iMessage client for Android, like these are the people that I'm thinking about here. It's not me and you who have a bunch of different phones and like, it's annoying that we have green bubbles and sometimes blue bubbles. It's like, this will actually improve friend groups and make families more cohesive. And to me, like that is a big deal. So plus the fact that Apple's making RCS part of its spec next year, like this is all good.
I don't want to call people out of touch, but I do think that if you were listening to this podcast, you were probably big into tech. And I would say that you should consider people like high school students, like college students, even just people who are maybe not as dialed into technology as you and I, dear listener, you know, might be. Yeah, we can maybe convince people in our lives to get on Telegram or whatever chat app you want. Or we can tell them, I don't care if you don't like my green bubble, like deal with it or whatever. But like these things do matter, especially at younger ages, to younger millennials and Gen Z in general. I think like the reason we... And I said this in my iPhone review this week too. I brought up Green Bubbles and Blue Bubbles, and I think I wrote this in a comment on piece Taylor wrote this week. But I think people are getting really frustrated, or readers are getting really frustrated with the focus on the Green Bubble and Blue Bubble divide. That is just like a shorthand way to be like the difference between enriched messaging and SMS. Like, that's really what we're talking about. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with the color of the bubble for the most part. I'm not saying there aren't people who actually that's all they care about, but it is shorthand to be like, people want typing indicators and red receipts and high res images especially. And I think any way to bring that to more people who are using different devices is a win.
Look, I'm not going to make a bigger deal about this than it is, because really, like, this is a moat within a moat, right? Like, this is a small group of people that it affects, but and like, yes, people get upset when we bring this up, but even more than just like the difference between plain SMS and how everybody's like, I use WhatsApp, I use Trello, I use Telegram, I use Signal, like, who cares? Or other people are like, what's wrong with SMS? It's fine. Or I have some people in RCS, some people on WhatsApp. Like, it may be fragmented, but like, I make it work. Good for you. Honestly, I'm happy for you. But what's really important here is not that iMessage is only popular in the US, so therefore this is a non-argument. There is a cultural importance that Apple's name attaches to the things that it makes. And it's not, we don't bring up Apple products on this podcast because we are diehard Apple users. It is because over the last few years, as your brilliant essay pointed out a few weeks ago, Apple has become the company for young people. And as an Android website, it would be insane and stupid and bad business if we did not acknowledge this. The fact that the Android market share in the biggest, most lucrative market in the world is getting smaller and smaller every year is bad for our business. It is bad for Google's business. It's bad for Samsung's business. And understanding why that's happening and what these companies can do to improve the situation, that is our job. That is why we do this thing.
Trust has to come into these storylines at some point, and it inevitably did, as the Department of Justice came down on Apple last month, accusing the tech giant of abusing its monopoly power to keep customers locked into its ecosystem by, among other methods, making iMessage irresistible to users and incompatible with other platforms. Here's episode 98.
All right, so Apple was sued by the US DOJ and 16 partner states. It was filed in the New Jersey courts, which I always find interesting, like, which court ends up being the one that actually files the lawsuit. I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason to it, but I think the Google one was filed in California. I don't know. Maybe they just flip a coin and see which one decides to do it. But there's an 88-page complaint. It pertains to five primary areas. Some of them are, I think, quite obvious, right? They pertain to messaging, right? The green bubble problem, Apple making it really difficult for iOS and Android users to communicate directly. They degrade messaging by forcing Android users to communicate over a very insecure SMS protocol. They have admitted that they're going to launch RCS support later this year. We don't know what form that will take. And that still won't solve the problem of older Android users requiring SMS. There's smartwatch support. So we know that when you buy an iPhone, you are encouraged to also buy an Apple Watch, a pair of earbuds like AirPods. Apple makes a lot of its own accessories, and it encourages you to buy them because it will give you, quote, the best experience with an iPhone, right? All of these things together make it really hard to leave that ecosystem. But what the complaint alleges is that Apple purposely degrades the performance of competitor smartwatches and other Bluetooth devices on its platform in order to make it more likely that you will choose an Apple Watch. They also make it impossible for Android users to use an Apple Watch because the Apple Watch is iPhone exclusive. Then there is digital wallets. Now, digital wallets, I don't know about you, but this was surprising to me. Not because I think there is, like, I actually think that this is a very clear example of monopolistic practice, but I also don't think that most people care or have a bad experience with their iPhone's digital wallet, because Apple Pay just works really well. But the complaint alleges that it prevents banks from launching their own digital wallets, and it forces the clients on either side to pay Apple a fee for every time they use Apple Pay, which again is a thing that Apple is very good at, making people pay. Then there is super apps. Now, I don't know, this one was really out of left field. Do you think super apps are something that most Americans even understand?
No. And I think the phrasing around super apps kind of comes directly from how the Google lawsuit that the DOJ pushed kind of came out, right? Like, I think it's kind of trying to change the language about how we understand some of the included apps on a smartphone that are there out of the box, is what I would say. But I think this is the one that I think is going to cause the most conversation, but also will require the most, like, investigation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Like, I'm very familiar with super apps. Because I know a lot of people that use them pretty regularly. And I have friends who travel to China a lot and interact with WeChat. I think WeChat is the best example, but there's KakaoTalk in Korea. There's Line in Japan. And I think Elon Musk has often said that he wants to make X into a super app. And, you know, God bless him, the guy wants to do a lot of very big things, but it's very unlikely that that will happen, largely because Apple has made it difficult for these apps to get access to the OS layers and the APIs that would allow them to have that functionality the way that they do on Android in those other countries. So, for example, in WeChat, you can order a cab, you can do all of these other things. You can pay your bills, and there are apps within the app that you can access. And I think Apple makes that extremely difficult. For one thing, it prevents web apps from accessing some APIs and local caching, but it also prevents apps from accessing certain parts of the operating system, or they wouldn't be approved if they are trying to do too many things. And I think that's where the concern is. So WeChat on iOS is a messaging app, right? Whereas in China, the way that it's distributed there on Android, it can be whatever the hell it wants to be.
Right. It kind of ties into the other complaints, right? Like, I think it's the reason that if you look at the press release that the DOJ put out, it is the first of the five bullet points, because, like, cloud streaming services kind of ties into the super apps thing. Messaging apps ties into the super apps thing. Like, these are platforms that I think, as you said, with the WeChat example, WeChat would be more on iOS if it was allowed to be.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Digital wallets, big one there, actually, I should say. Like, I'm sure WeChat would love to have a payment platform, right? It's stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then you mentioned the last one, which is access to cloud streaming. So,
yeah,
Apple has actually changed its policy here, but it hasn't implemented, or it's still made it, I think, egregiously difficult. Like, the policy was changed that would allow Microsoft to put Game Pass on the iPhone and not have to submit every single game that's available in Game Pass as a separate app. That was the previous policy. But payment sharing is still an issue, and Microsoft would still have to pay Apple 15% of every Game Pass subscription, and it would still be forced to adhere to all the other App Store rules. And I think Microsoft came out and just said, like, right now, even with these changes, we're not in a position to put Game Pass on the iPhone. I mean, that's, like, basically all we need to say about it, is even though Apple is acquiescing to some extent, it's making some changes to digital wallets in the EU as part of the DMA. It's going to support RCS. It will support cloud streaming technically. These are still major roadblocks that the DOJ considers to be construed as an illegal monopoly. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. I think what's kind of interesting about this is that I don't personally think that the DOJ has a strong case. These are things that Apple has leaned into for a very long time as like differentiators for the iPhone. A lot of vocal supporters of Apple in this situation are saying a lot of these tenets are the reason that being a part of the Apple ecosystem and using Apple's products are so good. The decisions that Apple has made, both horizontally and vertically, are why people enjoy these products. And that mixing and matching, right? Like having a Pixel watch and a pair of AirPods connected to an iPhone would be a demonstrably worse experience. Or Apple makes it so that like you can switch quickly between your Mac and your iPhone using AirPods, or your Apple Watch can unlock your Mac for you, right? These are things that Apple would say would not be possible if they just allowed an iPhone to connect to a Pixel Watch in the same way with the same amount of functionality, that they invest in all of these projects so that Apple users can get a better experience using Apple products. And the DOJ is saying, well, you could do it anyway, and you're competing, you're diminishing your own product's potential. Specifically, you're diminishing the iPhone's potential by not making it compatible with third-party products.
Yeah, so I agree with you to a point that I think the DOJ is going scattershot for a reason, right? Like, I think they're trying to hit as much as possible in order to at least come up with some kind of win. And to that point, I would say, I actually think their strongest arguments would be the smartwatch argument and the messaging argument, right? So the messaging argument, we'll talk about more with my interview with Eric and talk about Beeper and all of that. But we've also talked a lot about that on the show, and I think that's fairly well established, like our thoughts on iMessage and cross-platform messaging. On the smartwatch side, and I talked a little bit to Eric about this yesterday, it didn't really make its way into the piece because I mostly wanted to present Eric's thoughts. But you say like a Pixel watch connected to an iPhone with all of the same, or with the same level of access to the OS, right? The same level of like responding to notifications and things like that would not be able to function the same way that an Apple Watch does when you're talking about the Apple ecosystem. I still don't see a reason that like if anything, that is just competition, right? Like Apple can still say, if you buy our watch, you get it to use it with your Mac, right? Like you can't do that with Google, but you can do it with ours. But like all smartwatches have the same base level of access, and then you put that on top, versus you can't even respond to notifications actually. And I'm aware that like current Wear OS watches don't even really work with iOS anyway, but nevertheless, like the reason is because the experience was so bad that what was the point? But even taking one step back from that, like the bigger problem is the flip side of that, right? Which is that when you buy a $500 Apple Watch, you are now, you know, whatever percent less likely to drop the iPhone, right? Like you're not even going to consider competition anymore because that $500 accessory you just bought won't work on Android at all. And Apple came out and said that they worked on bringing the Apple Watch to Android for 3 years and got nowhere with it and just threw that progress away. This is the first time they've ever acknowledged that. I guess I believe them, but also like I don't see a reason that they could not have brought the Apple Watch to Android as far as like a technical reason, which is what they're alleging. I'm sure they have details that they're not. Maybe it wasn't up to their standards, but you know, it does feel a little bit like an excuse of like, oh yeah, no, we tried that, tried it for a while, just didn't work. 36 months of progress down the drain. And I think that's really the problem, right? It's not so much like, can an iOS user buy a Pixel Watch and use it on the iPhone and have a good experience? But like, if I've bought into an ecosystem, can I get out of it? The answer is like, not without wasting a bunch of money, right? That's kind of how I see the smartwatch thing.
I think there's two things there. One, if they just increased the baseline access to OS services for non-Apple Watch smartwatches, I don't think this would have been included, right? I don't think anybody really expects the Apple Watch as an iPhone accessory to work on Android, right? Like, I don't think anybody's making that jump. If you are, like, sure, but I just don't think that an accessory built specifically for a product is required. It's not a Bluetooth accessory. it may connect over Bluetooth, but it's a proprietary accessory to the iPhone, and the iPhone happens to be the center. What I think is more important is that Apple has completely undermined competitors' ability to give users a good experience on the iPhone. When Wear OS launched, when Android Wear launched, it basically advertised that, yes, it worked great on Android, but it also connected to the iPhone. A lot of Fossil's Wear OS watches, that was a big selling point, is that you could connect it to an iPhone. It was compatible with an iPhone. But the experience using a Fossil Android-powered watch on your iPhone is laughable. Laughable. Like, there's nothing you can do on it. You can barely do anything. There's no apps. You can't respond to a message. It's just completely undermined. And I think that's what Apple, I think its hubris prevented it from saying, okay, the Apple Watch can do so much now. Let's just increase the baseline access for third-party smartwatches to this. Let them just get access to the Quick Reply API. Give them basic access to some apps that we can stream from the phone. To me, it just makes perfect sense. But no, that's not going to happen, right? Like, if you have a Wear OS watch and you have Google Maps on your phone, on your iPhone, I mean, Apple would never have done this, but like, just to give you basic access to the notification so that if you have Google Maps open on your iPhone, you could stream that data to your Wear OS smartwatch, right? You don't even need standalone apps on your Wear OS watch that are compatible with the iPhone. Like, just sync them up. That's all you need, right? Like, that's the kind of thing that Apple could have done. And I think they willfully ignored that opportunity. And same thing with SMS, right? How many years have people been yelling at Apple to improve the messaging experience on iPhone? And every year it's like, we added these features to iMessage and zero has been done to improve the SMS experience.
So the reason that Apple adopted RCS in part, or announced they were going to adopt RCS in part, was to avoid actions like this DOJ lawsuit, actions like the EU considering iMessage as a gatekeeper. You know, that doesn't come out of nowhere. That's why they take these actions. And I would say it is too little too late. You know, we don't know what RCS is going to look like here. We're assuming it's going to launch with iOS in September, but we don't know, right? Like, it's obviously they're very concerned about the privacy elements of it. Really, I'm curious how they continue to hold that experience back, because outside of the fact they're going to keep Bubbles that hideous shade of green that is genuinely like bad for vision, like bad for users' vision. Like, I am curious to see how else they limit it beyond the iMessage exclusive like effects or stickers, stuff like that. I'm sure they will find a way to make it that you still don't want to use RCS if you're on an iPhone. That's been their main goal with iMessage the entire time. I'm curious, this has been kind of eaten away at me, so I'm just going to bring us here. One of the main statements that Apple issued in response to the DOJ is that the DOJ is trying to turn the iPhone into an Android phone. And I don't see how these complaints make that happen. Like, allowing consumers to have more choice in what they're using with their iPhone does not make it an Android phone. Like, there are more differences than the two platforms beyond you can buy a Fossil watch with it, right? But I am curious if you see any legitimacy to that argument from Apple.
I mean, the longer we go, the Apple Watch is offloading so much of its compute to the watch itself, right? It's relying less and less on the iPhone. And I think the fact that we're at that point with other, like Garmin, for instance, you can do a lot on a Garmin watch because everything's local. But the smartwatch aspects, if you're an iPhone user, are always undermined, right? It's the same thing. And I think the frustrating part here is there is now a very large divide between the Apple Watch, which relies on the iPhone for a lot of its data ingestion, and then the Apple Watch as a self-contained computer is the biggest issue. You know, the latest Pixel Watch 2 or any of the latest, more expensive Garmins, they're very capable, self-contained computers that just don't have access to the fire hose on iOS. It's like when Twitter turned off the fire hose access to third-party clients. Technically, they still worked, but all it did was kill those products completely. And what this does is it says to Garmin and to Fossil and to a lot of companies that are really trying to access 100% of the market, no, you only have access to, what, 40% of the US market if you want to advertise your product as a smartwatch. Because really, it's not a smartwatch. It's a fitness tracker or a something else that happens to receive notifications from your iPhone. And that's it. So when you look at it from that perspective, I do believe Apple is purposefully undermining the experience. And their argument that the Apple Watch is a great product and you shouldn't need to buy anything else doesn't hold much water.
Yeah, I agree. And I say that as I think it's well known among AP readership that I really like the Apple Watch. I gave it a positive review last year. Even as someone who thinks that Apple's take on smartwatches is relatively good, like, I still would like more choice on a platform like iOS, right? Or even let me take an Apple Watch to any of my 100 Android phones, because, like, if your experience is so good, then let me use it elsewhere. Like, if you really think you have the best smartwatch, then let me use it on a Pixel. Apple should trust its users to be like, we're going to keep coming back to you even if we have more options, because that's how good we are. And to me, that is kind of where I think the DOJ has something of a point, is that it's, there is nothing there, right? It is constantly Apple deciding for itself. And you can make the argument, as lots of Apple bloggers have over the last 30 hours or so, that that's what Apple users want. And this is Apple's argument too, is that that's what its customer base wants. Its customer base wants to buy into a secure top to bottom ecosystem and not have to think about, well, I don't, they're not saying this, but not to have to think about like, oh, do I want this Garmin watch, this Apple watch, or this Google watch? Doesn't matter. I have the product that does everything. I'm going to buy an Apple watch with my iPhone. And to that I say, like, I think if you really went out of your way to talk to non-diehard Apple fans, right? Like, you talked to 20-something, like, young professionals that have an iPhone because it has iMessage, and they were like, hey, would you consider, if it had the same functionality as an Apple Watch, or close to the same functionality, it could do, you know, most of what your Apple Watch does, would you consider this Pixel Watch? I bet some people would be like, yeah, I like the design more, because it looks very different, right? Like, it's smaller, it's rounded, it's curved around the edges, it's a good-looking watch. And to me, it's just that, like, I do think that Apple is at its core a little scared that people would consider jumping ship to other hardware should the experience not be locked into this closed ecosystem.
Well, I mean, there's the iPhone, which still makes up, I don't know, 50% of Apple's revenue. But then increasingly, it's the other sections, and especially software and services, that are keeping Apple so dominant, right? So when it comes down to this trial, this lawsuit is about the iPhone. That's at the center here. But Apple knows that the more things, like, for example, the Apple Watch, when you look at it as a standalone product, it's a great accessory for the iPhone, but it's also a window into Apple Health and Apple Fitness. You basically need an Apple Watch to take advantage of Apple Fitness Plus, right? And increasingingly, Apple's like, all right, well, I'll throw in Apple Music and Apple, you know, TV Plus and whatever. And why don't you just spend $44 a month on this Apple One Premier, because it gets everything in there at the same time. So you may not play Apple Arcade, but, like, I'm pretty sure you'll find something there that you like, because you're really purchasing this for Apple Fitness Plus, and you have to have an Apple Watch to take advantage of it. And you need an iPhone to use the Apple Watch. And, like, that's, I think, the pyramid scheme. I mean, it's not a pyramid scheme, but it's the pyramid structure that Apple has created that really, you know, the iPhone is at the base, and then it just keeps building on top of that. You know, you could argue that that's just really savvy marketing and a really savvy business model, which it is. But you can also argue that, is Apple abusing that now dominant position to prevent people from leaving by adding more and more dependencies, not just to the iPhone, but to the accessories that rely on the iPhone and the services that are not available elsewhere, right? So if, for example, Apple decided to make Apple Fitness Plus, and I think like the contrast between Apple Music, where Apple makes a pretty good but not great product that's not any better than the incumbent, and Apple Fitness Plus, which is a value add for the Apple Watch user, that's, to me, the most blatant example here, that Apple has brought its other services to Android and other platforms when it deems it financially expedient. Apple TV Plus is available on Samsung televisions natively, right?
Yeah, you may forget that. Truly one of the worst UI experiences I will ever have is touching any Samsung television.
Yeah, and Apple did it. Apple created an app for it.
Yep.
So when you think about that, you're like, all right, well, this is very much just a canny marketer working with Tim Cook to try to keep people on the iPhone. And I guess the question is, does this cross the line into an illegal monopoly? And I think individually, you can look at these five distinct components and say, probably not, except for messaging, because I do believe that iMessage is the stickiest of all five of these categories. But then you could dig into each one, as we've just done for Apple Watch, and say, how many dependencies over the last decade has Apple created on top of everything else, right? Like, for example, I don't think anybody using an iPhone, if they had to give up Apple Pay, like, it's convenient, but it's not the end of the world if Apple Pay disappeared tomorrow, right? But if you said to them, hey, your Chase Bank app will work exactly the same whether you use an iPhone or an Android phone, and we will be able to add other features on top of that because we're not relying on Apple's infrastructure. Apple's just giving us access to the NFC chip and we're going to innovate there. Not only would Chase provide a better user experience, but Apple would be required to innovate on the Apple Pay system itself. And that, I think, is another example of like how this just keeps Apple in areas where it's already very dominant and where people are saying this experience is good enough, but not great. They've just stopped innovating. Apple Music, I think, is the exception because Apple Music sucks so badly and they don't seem to be improving it at all year over year. But I think that has to do with the economics of music streaming more than anything else. But
well, credit where credit's due on Apple Music. They really pushed forward actual high quality streaming audio to the base plan. It was, I believe, $9.99 at the time. Now it's $10.99, right? But like Amazon followed immediately, like within, I want to say, 24 hours of that move a couple of years ago. Tidal recently basically was like, you know what? We're done with our $20 a month plan. We're just bringing those features down to our $11 a month plan to better compete with Apple Music. And I am pretty sure that the reason that Spotify Hi-Fi never launched is because Apple did this. And so they have spent the last 2 years trying to figure out, we don't want to bring high quality audio down to the $11 tier. What can we offer at $20 alongside high quality audio that will make consumers want to buy it? And the answer, based on like what has leaked on, Supremium, their Supremium plan is like a bunch of AI stuff and better stats and you know, which like maybe people will buy into, we'll see, but whenever that does launch. But Apple Music has its issues. Credit where credit's due. Like, they definitely pushed the industry there, and you can see the effects on basically all of its competition. I didn't bring up YouTube Music, but I believe they're in the same boat.
Apple also moved the industry forward on spatial audio, and I don't know if I'll ever forgive them for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they should, if anything, they should be sent to prison.
Yeah. Okay. I think there's probably a lot more to say about this. There's a lot of really good reporting out there. The Verge has good reporting. Wired has good reporting. Let's just finish this conversation talking about that piece you wrote about what Eric said. I know he's obviously got skin in the game, but what's his take on how this is going to play out? What's going to actually happen here? Did you guys talk about that at all?
I think that's kind of where we left off, was more in the space of like, I think Eric is as, I don't want to say unclear as the rest of us. I think he obviously sees Apple as absolutely like running a monopoly of some sort, right? Like, and to Eric's credit, like, this isn't just a Bieber thing, right? This isn't just an iMessage thing. As we talked about, he has basically been bumping up against Apple's restrictions on iOS as a platform for a decade, right? Like going back to Pebble, which is indirectly referenced in this lawsuit when it comes to the APIs that Apple was rolling out in 2013 versus 2014. In 2015, when the Apple Watch was announced and launched, respectively, right? That these were completely different APIs for the two platforms, right? So there was a Notification Center API in 2013 that Pebble took advantage of that mirrored notifications. The Apple Watch got a actionable notification, which you could use to respond to notifications with the microphone, right? And the Pebble Watches that had microphones, they could do that on Android. They could not do it on iOS. That API didn't exist. All you could do was see notifications incoming, right? This is a decade ago.
Yeah, more. It was 12 years ago.
No. Well, yeah, 2013 with the Pebble, with the first Pebble, but the Apple Watch launch.
Oh, sorry. I saw the first Pebble prototype at Google I.O. 2012. Yeah. But okay. You're right. It came on market in 2013.
I can't yell at you for screwing up dates. I was convinced yesterday the Apple Watch, for the first like 20 minutes this article was live, I said the Apple Watch was in 2014 because I remembered where I was when the Apple Watch was announced. Yeah. And I forgot that it took like another 6 months to come to market. It didn't come to market until
2015.
April of 2015. Yeah. I knew where I was for the announcement, not so much the launch. But, you know, and then he was at Y Combinator, and that's a venture capitalist firm, basically, right? And he talked to me about the amount of startups that came to him and how many of them had to think first and foremost about what was allowed on Apple's platform before they could even start innovating on ideas, which I think is maybe the most interesting of these three, right? Like, obviously, Pebble directly impacts him. Bieber and iMessage directly impact him. The startup argument and the fact that we, you know, the argument, the quote that I have in my piece is that that kind of thinking, meaning thinking first and foremost about Apple, stifles innovation before the innovation even starts, is a quote that has stuck with me since we talked yesterday. And then Bieber, and we've talked a lot about Bieber on this podcast recently over the last few months, and so I don't need to get into everything that happened there. But obviously, Bieber, again, indirectly referenced, not by name, but certainly by use case, referenced in the DOJ complaint about a third-party developer, quote-unquote, bringing iMessage to Android. I do continue to find it fascinating of how both Congress members and this DOJ complaint talk about Bieber, because like they do tend to leave out that it was a unauthorized iMessage client, right? Like that is a problem in making the pro Bieber argument, is that like Apple does run iMessage as a closed platform and does have the right to shut down an app that is circumventing the need to run it on Apple hardware, but that's neither here nor there. In terms of where he sees it going, he's not surprised this happened. He thought this was coming for a long time, but that there's a long way to go. And I think in saying that, you know, is saying this could go any sort of direction. I think, personally speaking, I think the fact that, well, okay, so Eric, and this is more so on his Twitter than in our conversation, but Eric has been making a lot of comparisons to the DOJ versus Microsoft case of the 1990s, and he's not the only one. You can read lots of reporting on that across the web this weekend. The issue there, right, is that Microsoft's market share was like 90%, and Apple's iPhone market share in the US is like 55% or something like that. Those are very different numbers. My concern is the DOJ bringing this too early to convince a court that Apple has a monopoly. Obviously, we can see where the trend is going. 90% of teenagers have iPhones, but you know, it's a harder argument to make when you're like, well, they have just over half market share. What's the problem? But Eric basically told me that there's a lot more to come on this, and that he sees this as a step towards benefiting both iPhone and Android users, not just benefiting Android users who want to message their iPhone friends.
So I think that's a really good place to end, because I want to bring up this idea of switching costs, right? You know that if your parents open a bank account for you, or they make a Gmail email address, or any number of things for you when you're a kid, you're much less likely to switch away from those services. My parents decided on a bank. I did switch because I worked at a bank, but like I still have a connection to that original bank to some extent. And like, I dislike the fact that the Canadian ecosystem, the regulators have not made it easy for me to take my money and put it in another bank, or they don't even let banks share data. So if I want to have some sort of aggregator like Mint, I can't even get access to my banking data because the APIs are not required. And in the US, they are. So there's so many examples of switching cost. And I think one really good example is the iPhone. When you're a teenager and you decide that you want an iPhone to send iMessages to your friends, by the time you're 25 or 30 and you have your own income and you're making your own decisions as an adult, you're much less likely to switch because by then you have all of the apps, you have all of the accessories, and you have all of this muscle memory that is like, why should I even bother? And that is, I think, the main cause of this super app concern, because if we had the ability to open an app and share data, much more detailed, granular, layered data in the cloud that didn't rely on the OS layer as much as it does today, then sending an iMessage would be just another thing that you just kind of have to think about. But I am fairly certain, like, I like the ability to send iMessages when I'm on an iPhone. In a million years, that is not the reason that I would stay on an iPhone. But I can absolutely see that being the case. And as you get older and that becomes less and less important because you can open WhatsApp or any other number of messaging apps and you don't mind so much, you've already bought all the other things, right? And that's right.
You've spent the $500 on the Apple Watch, and if you switch to Android now, that thing is just going to be a paperweight in your drawer.
Exactly. And you have the Mac for work, and you have the this, exactly. And you have the that. And you're like, why should I bother? I enjoy these products. And nowhere is the DOJ saying Apple makes bad products that people don't like, right? There's a reason Apple's customer satisfaction ratings are the highest in the industry, because people like their products, but you're in the pit, but the pit has a lot of balls in it, and you just love playing in the ball pit. But like, you can't get out of the pit, so you're just stuck playing with the same ball. That's not bad metaphor, but you know what I'm saying.
No, Daniel, that's perfect. I think that's great. I think we stop saying walled garden, because who doesn't like a garden?
Right.
Who doesn't want to be in a nice...
I want to be in a ball pit both... in a dungeon. That's the metaphor that I think we should use from now on.
But listen, it is snowing outside for both of us, right? We are close enough to each other.
Correct. It is snowing very hard right now.
That we are experiencing the same weather pattern currently. I would love to be in a nice walled garden right now. A ball pit in a dungeon, not so much. Mm-hmm. So let's start calling it. That's what we're doing now. It's
you can take it. It's free, folks. You can start calling it the ball pit of doom.
Not all the time, but sometimes I'm like, well, I know exactly what Jules is going to put as the headline when he publishes this on our website, and I think this is what it's going to be.
Amazing. All right, let's move on.
Are we going to pivot to me talking about a bad Android?
I mean, we're going to talk about Android for at least a couple minutes on the Android Police podcast. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just not really fulfilling our obligations.
I mean, let me say this, right? Like, this lawsuit obviously has a lot to do with Android. So it would be silly for us to not look at it from an Android perspective and think about what this means for both platforms. Because as Eric said in my interview with him, like, the outcome of this lawsuit will impact every smartphone user in some way, right? Like, even if you don't really think about it, like, we don't know what this will do to the smartphone industry, but whatever the outcome is, you know, if Apple wins across the board, right? Like, I think you continue to see Android's market share in the US shrink. I think that is probably what will happen. If Apple loses everything across the board, that might still be true. But like, I think that it is crucial to pay attention to this case over the next, you know, 5 years is probably a good guess, because it's going to matter.
And that's probably how long it'll take to complete.
Exactly.
With all the appeals and the yeah. delays and stuff.
Yeah.
So, as this case will be in the courts for years, meanwhile, Bieber has come off of trying to infiltrate the iMessage fortress. The core app has been revamped, and the company is set to be acquired by WordPress owner Automattic. Android Police will stay on top of this, just as you would expect it to. Thank you for listening this week, and make sure to send in any feedback to podcast@androidpolice.com. For Will Saddleberg and Daniel Bader, I'm Jules Wong. We'll be back next week. Until then, take care.